Hey, everybody, and welcome to Bold City Sports Talk. My name is Rob. With me generally is Ben. Unfortunately, he is experiencing some internet problems, the dreaded internet. So I'm going to do this by myself. I hope you guys enjoy. I've got some interesting topics to talk about. Starting off with the World Series, the Washington Nationals are up on the Houston Astros 2-0. That is correct. You heard me right. 2-0. The Washington Nationals once again are playing somebody in the playoffs that nobody expected. And I am probably speaking for the 99.9%. Nobody expected to even stand a chance. And yet here we are 2 games in and they are up 2-0. My question is, what's going on here with the Astros? Because mind you, these 2 games were both taken in Minute Maid Park in Houston here, and the Nationals are currently up 2-0. The Washington Nationals in a whole this season essentially has been described by the narrative that they don't have Bryce Harper. They lost Bryce Harper to free agency this year, of course, to the Philadelphia Phillies, signing that monstrosity of a contract. God, what was it? 12, 13 years for $330 million or something. Essentially, Bryce Harper was holding out for the biggest contract in baseball history and received it, again, from the aforementioned Philadelphia Phillies, only to be trumped 1 month later by Mike Trout of the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, who ended up signing an even longer contract worth $100 million more. So kudos to you, Mr. Harper. I hope you're enjoying the Nationals not only succeeding past the first round of the playoffs this year, but being up 2-0 in the World Series. Something, if I had a time machine, whether it be a DeLorean with a flux capacitor in it or whatever it is that the infamous fantasy of a time machine would end up becoming, I don't see you ever winning a World Series. So I think the storyline here is this. I believe that the Washington Nationals are this year a legitimate threat, as we are all witnessing before our eyes currently right now, again being up 2-0 to the Astros. Without the likes of Bryce Harper, who everybody has proclaimed as this kind of renaissance, next up-and-coming superstar in the majors, and clearly that's not the case. Clearly, the Nationals are exceeding expectations. Again, the narrative at the beginning of the year being that the fact that they weren't able to lock down Bryce Harper, they're doing better without him. And yeah, I mean, the Astros coming into the season were looked at as a top five team and expected to get to the World Series, which they are currently right now, but again, down 2-0 to the Washington Nationals. The Nationals, pretty interesting team this year. Never were they ever in first place in the NL East. They ended the season with a 93-69 record. And kind of jumping off a little bit on their record, very interesting. In March, April, and May collectively were a combined 24-33. Weren't even playing 500 baseball. And turning the calendar from May to June, in June, July, August, and September combined were a 69-36. They were winning 2/3 of their schedule. Again, starting June 1st, they were winning 2/3 of their games. this was a team, again, not even 500, not even in contention in the NL East, totally flipping everything around and exceeded all expectations. Again, a team that couldn't even get past the NLDS, had to play a very hot Milwaukee Brewers team that was subtracted of Christian Yelich. But here they are. Here we are, 2-0 right now in the World Series with the likes of a Steven Strasburg, with the likes of a Max Scherzer, the signing of Patrick Corbin from the Arizona Diamondbacks, a very sneaky pickup in Anibal Sanchez. Again, another sneaky pickup with Kurt Suzuki, who blew Game 2 wide open of the World Series with the home run. And, you know, throughout the season, the Nationals weren't talked about, but here they were picking up an Asdrubal Cabrera, picking up a Howie Kendrick in the offseason, a Jacksonville, Florida native. Gerard Opara, who now everybody looks at as that whole, you know, shark song. I'm blanking on it, of course, because I'm not an avid listener of the song, but mommy shark of some sort, I don't know. But if you're a parent, I'm sure you know, you're well aware of the song all the children love. But they collected all of these guys who just fit perfectly on a team that had really great players on there, including, too, Anthony Rendon, who really made a name for himself, who will be a free agent at the end of this year. The Washington Nationals were almost a perfect storm that everybody was just essentially ignoring all season long solely because they, quote-unquote, lost their best player in Bryce Harper, and that clearly is not the case. Bryce Harper, I hope you're enjoying your money, because all of your friends out in Washington are two games away from winning a World Series. So kudos to you. But most importantly, kudos to the Washington Nationals for being in the position that they're in right now. At the end of the season, we're getting so close. You know, and I know a 2-0, that doesn't essentially mean a World Series ring. But, you know, the Astros are a good enough team to make up for lost ground. But, man, we're on some lost ground. Game 3 is tomorrow. We got Zach Greinke against Anibal Sanchez. And Zach Greinke, I mean, we're all aware of his postseason woes. I mean, he's going to have to step up. I mean, he's going to have to step up. He's going to have to win them this game, because being 3-0 is a lot different than being 2-0. And, we'll see. I mean, again, the Nationals have made this very interesting. So as I was getting to, we are towards the end of the Major League Baseball season, and we are so close to hearing the NL and AL MVP. Everybody loves talking about this, NL, AL, Cy Young. Just going to put in my 2 cents real quick. NL MVP, I mean, I don't see outside of again, Anthony Rendon, Cody Bellinger has had a season that I don't think a lot of people will forget. For a majority of this season, if not just the whole 162 games, he has been the most feared hitter. He's had a career year. I think Bellinger only gets better. I think the Dodgers do have, you know, they got to make something happen here in order to get a little more protection around him. The Justin Turners of the world are slowly but surely starting to fade out. And the Dodgers are going to have to get younger. I think the NL MVP only has to go to Bellinger. And if anybody's a close second, it's going to be Anthony Rendon of the Washington Nationals. The American League MVP, I believe this is the year that it's not Mike Trout, though. I mean, you could even make an argument, of course, for it being Mike Trout. But American League, I think, needs to go to Alex Bregman. I think he's taken a huge step forward this year. I think not only is he the shortstop of the future of the Houston Astros, but I believe that he's a top five player going forward. And this year he really proved it, and I believe is deserving of the American League MVP. Going into the Cy Young, I think it's a two-way race. I think you got Jacob DeGrom of the New York Mets, and then you have a combination of the two, so I guess almost a three-way, of Steven Strasburg, who finally was able to stay healthy this year. I know in spring training they toyed around with his mechanics and more or less was trying to get him to throw out of the windup, which only has done him, you know, clearly was just a different pitcher this year. Threw over 200 innings for the first time in as long as I can possibly remember. He's always had the stuff, just couldn't stay healthy. And this year he stayed healthy and he proved himself worthy. And here he is pitching, you know, again, you know, in the World Series. And then opposite of him is Max Scherzer, you know, Mad Max. He just continues year in and year out to prove that he's one of the best pitchers in baseball. Had a tough, rough, I was close to about a month worth of back problems, but he's still Max Scherzer. He's still amazing. But I do believe that it is going to be the National League reigning Cy Young winner, Jacob DeGrom, who's going to ultimately end up winning the NL Cy Young. American League Cy Young, you know, opposite again of Scherzer and Mad Max, you've got probably one of the two in Garrett Cole, who this year is, you know, really made a name for himself. You know, he is now legitimized himself as a true ace. And then you got, you know, the always trusty Justin Verlander. I don't think you could go wrong with either or. I think Garrett Cole will edge out Justin Verlander only because of the strikeouts this year. Again, to kind of recap a little bit, I'm going NL, I'm going DeGrom. Didn't have the same year he had last year, but still just as dominant. In the American League, I'm looking at Garrett Cole. I think he's arguably, in my honest opinion, the best pitcher in baseball, and I believe that a lot of people would agree with me on that. Again, just judging by the numbers he's put up this year, just amazing, amazing stuff. Going on the flip side, from the players to the managers, I mean, we're not even done with the 2019 campaign yet. Here we are. Already looking at four new hires here. The Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim went and hired ex-Cubs manager Joe Maddon. I mean, let's be honest. Angels here are trying to get over the hump. They have Mike Trout. You know, they have a few players here and there. You know, they went and got Ohtani with a big contract 2 years ago. And, you know, I don't know if that's really going to end up paying dividends. And to be honest, I think injuries are already starting to pile up with them. But they're getting Maddon. They got Maddon. They want to try to make something happen here. I'm very curious to see what happened between him and the Cubs. And I think it'll be a little more clear come the beginning of next year. I have this suspicion that we're going to end up hearing that Joe Maddon lost, quote unquote, the team. Something didn't seem right midway through the season with Joe Maddon and the Cubs. There's too much talent on that team to not make the playoffs, which, you know, ultimately they didn't. So I'm very interested to see, like, where the narrative is there. The Cubs, on the flip side, just recently signed David Ross. He was a previous catcher with the Cubs and the Red Sox, most notably. Was the go-to catcher for John Lester. Has always kind of been a character, more or less, again, coming up with that Cubs team that ultimately broke the curse. I don't know. I mean, you know, this is, again, another one of those, it was kind of signings, in my opinion, for a manager, which, you know, arguably, I don't even know what a manager really means these days with baseball, with how much analytics are involved. Is he a yes man? Possibly. All I know is he was previously you know, a battery mate for starting pitchers. And a lot of people kind of more or less will just kind of agree, like, oh, I guess if he could manage a game, he can manage a team. I don't know, you know. Go talk to previous Angels manager Brad Ausmus about that. Didn't work one season. We gave up on him. Joe Girardi, as we know, was let go from the Yankees after a few years. And speaking of, Joe Girardi got hired as the Phillies manager. I believe it was 3 years. And my biggest question to all that is, what will the old school, hard-headed Joe Girardi, will he work with this essentially pretty young Phillies team, and especially highlighting that of Bryce Harper? I don't know. I don't believe that Gabe Kapler was the answer. I think for the Phillies to, after 2 years, more or less just saying, okay, enough's enough. I mean, there's no reason, again, judging that by that that Phillies team, there's no reason for them to be finishing fourth in the NL East. There's just not. And not after you give Bryce Harper $330 million, let alone any player for that matter, $330 million. If you're not winning that division, you're doing something wrong. And Gabe Kapler constantly in all of his interviews, whether it be post-game or, you know, during the game or, you know, all-star break, just constantly was preaching everything was fine, and clearly it wasn't. You don't finish fourth in the NL East and say everything's fine. You just don't. There falls back something on the manager that essentially has to go, something's wrong here and I'm here to fix it. And the whole time he essentially was painting the picture that everything was fine when it wasn't. And I think the Phillies showed him the exit because simply of that fact. San Diego Padres went and hired Jace Tingler. He was a player development coach from the Texas Rangers. They had went and passed on previous third base coach Ron Washington from the Atlanta Braves, who looks to go back to Atlanta. But, you know, I'm not going to be surprised if Ron Washington finds a job eventually. The New York Mets, San Francisco Giants, and Kansas City Royals are all still looking for a manager. And I think Ron Washington previously, manager of the Texas Rangers, I still think could be a great fit for one of those very huge voids. I mean, we're talking about, you know, some pretty big teams here. The New York Mets, who are they going to get? And are they going to be, you know, the last dog to the bowl when it comes to a manager? Because they got to get something. Mickey Callaway was a complete disappointment. Clearly, they wouldn't have gotten rid of him if that wasn't the case. I mean, again, we're talking about Jacob DeGrom potentially being back-to-back a Cy Young candidate. You're talking about they took a risk on Pete Alonso. He panned out all season long, broke the home run rookie record. And how can you tell me you're not threatening to do something? Who are they going to get? I'm not sure. The San Francisco Giants saying goodbye to a legend in Bruce Bochy, who I had read that the Padres and Bruce Bochy, previously a Padres manager, reached out to Bruce Bochy to essentially say, hey, is there any chance you'd be willing to come back? And he's saying, no, he's done. Understandable. Giants had their great run there. Was it the, it was the even year. I think it was 3 of 5 seasons they won a World Series under his belt. I mean, what more do you have to prove? He's a lock for the Hall of Fame. He's been managing his life away. And, kudos to him to know when to say when. And the Giants team is, you know, isn't anywhere near to the extent of what they used to be, especially, you know, of course, winning those World Series. And the Kansas City Royals, that's essentially where I feel that that's where I feel Ron Washington would be a great fit. I feel like they're a young enough team. They've got some pretty nice bats sitting out there. They could use some help with some arms, but the Jorge Solares of the world, the Whit Merrifields, I just I have a feeling that would be a good fit for him. And Alberto Mondesi is somebody I was just thinking off the top of my head. And even vets like an Alex Gordon and Salvador Perez, Hunter Dozier being another young guy. I mean, I could see, a Ron Washington being able to get through all of them. And I just really feel like he'd be a really great fit for the Kansas City Royals. And I hope to see him managing again. He's good for baseball. All right, let's jump off the baseball train a little bit. Let's get into the basketball. Basketball tipped off, the NBA tipped off on Tuesday. The kind of big story as of right now is essentially who's going to rule LA. You know, you got the Clippers, the revamped Clippers, Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, and they took on LeBron James and Anthony Davis led Los Angeles Lakers, and the Lakers lost. Which, of course, everybody's got to jump on the what's happening now, and it's game one. And lo and behold, Lakers lost, Clippers won. So everybody, oh, what's wrong with the Lakers? What's wrong with them? Well, the problem is it's only game one. We're one game of 81 games. A lot of time here. Let's not get too frenzied here, but I do challenge one thing. When it comes to the Lakers, my big argument is here, where are the shooters? You know, you got an aging, albeit still great, LeBron James. He's not 25 anymore, not 24, not 23. He's in his mid-30s. You got Anthony Davis, who's a great down-low presence, but where are the shooters? If the NBA has proved anything these days, is it's they're straying away from being that 1-2 or even, you know, big three kind of presence to make, you know, to make something happen anymore. It is a team game. The Golden State Warriors a few years ago showed if you spread the ball and shoot a lot of three-pointers, that's a lot better than a few dunks here and there and or just trying to get the ball down low. You know, this isn't the NBA of the 90s anymore. This is a shoot-first NBA. We know that. It's been that way for a long time, but do the Lakers realize that? And I don't think so. Lakers missed the playoffs last year. Lakers went and got LeBron James. Yes, they did. Did it bring some hype back into Los Angeles? Sure. The problem is again, two players are not going to make one team, and you're going to need some shooters. And again, I think when the Lakers are 5-15 in the first 20 games, I think you're going to start hearing LeBron James' voice coming out a little more. I think you're going to start questioning whether or not the Lakers are serious about winning. Are the Clippers the better team? All speculation. We're one game in. But questions, of course, will always have to be asked. And my big question is to the Lakers, do you have shooters? And the answer is, as of right now, no. No. Do I think the Clippers are better than you? Maybe. But as of right now, I think there's a huge hole in the Lakers team, and again, that's shooters. Got to do something about it. Something has to change. Two guys are not going to carry that team. It just proved to not work anymore. Houston Rockets are another team. Big change up this year. Got James Harden, Russell Westbrook, previous teammates with the Oklahoma City Thunder. They're back together. They're playing tonight. They lost to the Milwaukee Bucks and the Greek Freak, 117-111. And the big question everybody's asking, can Russell Westbrook, can James Harden coexist? It's a great question. Back in Oklahoma City when they both were playing next to some guy named Kevin Durant, it didn't work. Why is it going to work now? I don't know. It's a great question. They're two just highly talented players that need to learn to be able to make this work, because if so, I just think great things are coming. I'm not going to say this is a catastrophe. I'm not pulling out a Max Kellerman, you know, even before the game even played, saying that they're not even that great of a backcourt. But make it work. Make this work, because just like any sport, two great scorers are better than one. But there is, as the old adage goes, only one ball to go around. Make this work, because this could be something so exciting. This could be a phenomenal Houston Rockets team who essentially, instead of having one James Harden, you could make an argument that it's two, because Russell Westbrook has that ability. Might not have the shot that James Harden has, but man, it's just a guy that can get to the hole and score quick. And I think that could be something really, really special. You also have the Nationals, excuse me. You also have the Warriors playing. They're currently playing against the aforementioned Clippers. What are the Warriors going to look this year? No Kevin Durant. Klay Thompson, I think they're saying, is out all season long. I think Steve Kerr just recently came out and said that. I mean, this is now truly Steph Curry's team. Steph Curry is going to have to make something happen, and do so with some new faces. This is the first time, really, the Warriors have really had this kind of shakeup. You know, D'Angelo Russell, him coming over from the Nets and everything. You know, this is a totally different team. And I mean, I think that's going to be another narrative that will only either work or not work. And there's a lot of people I know that are saying that there's no chance, but I mean, it's the NBA, you know, and yes, it's the West, and the West will always be the best, but you know, Steph Curry's just going to have to make it happen. I mean, I think Steph Curry, if it's going to happen, he's going to end up being MVP, because he's taken this team on his back, and he's going to have to make something happen out of nothing. So that'll be very interesting. Jumping over to college football, we got some really great games lined up here. We got number 13, Wisconsin, huge loss against Illinois, a huge loss, essentially right now derailing their hopes of winning the Big Ten West, especially with Minnesota being undefeated currently. Going to the Horseshoe against number 3, the Ohio State University. Could this be one of those games that Wisconsin comes in and they're mad they lost the last week and make something happen? Maybe. Do they have the offense that the Buckeyes have? No, not at all. And I think that essentially what edges out Wisconsin. Yes, they have a great defense, but I think Justin Fields is just has talent that's just out of this world. You got number 9 Auburn against number 2 LSU. You're going into Death Valley. Not a lot of people come out alive there. I think Auburn at number 9, I don't think that's going to last too much longer, especially after this weekend. I think LSU ends up taking this thing. I think LSU's that good this year, leading college football in offense, which is abnormality. But I think this is the year that LSU really, I think Coach O really has put together a heck of a team here. And then the game I'm actually really most look forward to, and it's only because the implications that are coming here forward. Number 8 Notre Dame travels to Ann Arbor. Number 19 Michigan, who just lost against Penn State. Michigan is not the team from week 1. They're not the team from week 2. They've only exponentially gotten better. The double overtime barely eclipsing beating Army, and even the team that got slaughtered by Wisconsin. This is a different team. if you're a Michigan fan calling for Jim Harbaugh's head, I don't think that you're a true Michigan fan, because he's turning this whole college back to the way it used to be. Is it taking a little longer than everybody expected? Sure. But that's not his fault. That's not his fault at all. We love, you know, making the coach the scapegoat, and that's what's happened to Jim Harbaugh here in Michigan. But he's got that team lined up. If I have to place any blame on anybody, I think it's Shea Patterson. Shea Patterson can't make the big plays. That proved in the big state, the Penn State game. That proved that not only did Michigan lead in time of possession, but they were the better team in the second half against Penn State. But the problem is Shea Patterson couldn't throw a touchdown. And if your quarterback can't throw touchdowns, then there's problems. And, you know, I know, I don't know. I have a feeling Michigan beats Notre Dame here. I think Notre Dame's loss against Georgia, who ultimately, of course, ended up having that shocking loss against the Gamecocks, doesn't look that great anymore. And I think Michigan at in Ann Arbor, I think is going to end up taking this Notre Dame game. I don't think it'll be a blowout or anything, but I think Michigan wins. And that essentially will lead me to coaches on the hot seat. We all love talking about this. We're a little more than halfway through the college season. And everybody loves talking about hot seats, but what I would like to do is do something a little different. I want to talk about the hot seats, of course. I want the hot take on it, right? Who's out? You know, who should be sticking around? But let's do something a little different. I think if we're talking about a hot seat, let's talk about what's in flames here. What part of the seat physically is on flame? So it's a three-stepper. You got just the legs of the seat, so we're looking at, like, you know, a mild, like, let's just wait and see if the season looks out. And then I feel that the fire would then proceed up from the legs to the back of the seat. So that would be, like, second step. That means, like, things are getting a little hotter. And then when that actual seat that coach is sitting on is on fire, we are at maximum. We're at a maximum engulfed in flames here at that point, and that means we've got problems. So what I would love to do is start off right where I just left off with the Notre Dame-Michigan game. Jim Harbaugh recently has been, quote-unquote, linked to the NFL, which he then wrote an email to all of his players' parents saying, quote-unquote, it is total crap that he is there for Michigan. I don't see, one, what NFL team would buy into his stock right now. I have no clue. Maybe the Jaguars? I don't know. I think he's a Michigan man. He was a quarterback for Michigan. I think that they would have to run him out of town in order for those things to happen. But I think that Michigan is even afraid to even make that happen simply because of the fact of how many recruits they would leave, that they would lose due to the fact that Jim Harbaugh is just that great of a recruiter. I mean, like, why are we trying to run him out of town? What? I get it. You know, not all the stats are there. And again, it's taking a little longer. Sure. But, I mean, you're still looking at a very, very competitive very competitive Big Ten East. You got Ohio State, who's just the class of the class. Penn State, it just continues to get a little better. Michigan State is still a tough opponent. I mean, in my honest opinion, if it's not the SEC, then it's the Big Ten. And especially, look at both Easts. I mean, they're both very dominant divisions in college football. But on the flip side, there's Brian Kelly. Okay, did they make the playoffs last year? Yeah. Did they get smoke checked by Clemson? Yeah, they did. If Notre Dame loses this game, there's a really good chance they just blew every opportunity to getting back into the playoffs, let alone even sniffing the playoffs, because the only two ranked teams that they had played at, again, coming to this point, you're looking at Georgia and Michigan. So you're telling me the only two games that actually mattered on their schedule they couldn't win? Come on. How much more Brian Kelly can Notre Dame really, like, Notre Dame wants to succeed. And if Brian Kelly is giving you great wins against partial ACC opponents, but he's not winning the big ones, how much longer do they make that last? Especially when an Urban Meyer's floating around. And you know it's only a matter of time until Urban Meyer makes something happen. So let's do this. Let's play a game. Michigan loses this game. I'm going the back of that seat is getting extremely hot for him. So I'm going 2 out of 3 chances that Jim Harbaugh is getting nailed. And that Michigan starts kind of starting this rumor. Is it time to move on? It's not time yet because again, what they showed me in the second half of that Penn State game, Brian Kelly on the other side. I think if Notre Dame loses this game, I think Brian Kelly's seat is fully engulfed in flames. And I believe the legs of that seat, the back of that seat, and the seat itself is fully on fire, because how much longer can Notre Dame wait around? And I don't think it's for very much longer. So I think this game holds a lot of clout. I think this will be very interesting to see how this pans out. But again, if judging from everything I've seen this year, I think Michigan wins. And I think Brian Kelly is suddenly going to be on a very hot seat. So let's drop down a little bit. The place that I believe that Urban Meyer would go would be USC. I think the Trojans with Clay Helton, I don't think they're going to hold on to him for much longer. Very disappointing seasons to start the season, to start out. And again, with Urban Meyer floating around, and I just know it, and just judging from a couple things I've heard and things that he said, that he has this itch and that he'd want to go back. Why not? He already dominated the SEC with the Gators. They dominated the Big Ten with Ohio State. And now why not? Why not go to the West Coast, the Pac-12, and take on a team like the Trojans? I mean, the Trojans still have that kind of pull. And, I mean, I've read some things that think that Notre Dame being an independent school, I don't think he wants to do that. I think he still wants a challenge. And I think he would get that with Southern California, man. And again, they still have that pull. I mean, they're still getting recruits, and he's a hell of a recruiter and an even better coach at that. I mean, he's the complete package. So I'm going Clay Helton's seat this year right now. I'm saying that back of the seat is engulfed in flames, and that seat right underneath his rear is starting to heat up. And even if Urban Meyer were to make an inkling and say, oh God, who wouldn't want to go to USC? I do believe that Clay Helton will be gone. Charlie Strong, I think, is, for lack of a better term, a dead man walking here at USF. It's not his fault. I mean, it's Southern Florida, and they've been okay the last decade, nothing special, but they're not going anywhere. I think they were hoping he was going to pull from Florida the way that he used to, being a defensive coordinator there with the Gators. And I don't think it's happening. And I think of all the coaches, I think his seat is almost completely burned down to ashes at this point, because he just is not making a lot of money, and for USF, kicking him to the curb, I don't think would mean much. I think Charlie Strong is I think he's a goner. Chip Kelly, I think, is a very interesting kind of coach. Everybody, of course, knows him in his days of Oregon, running the RPO and everything, and essentially going to the NFL and unfortunately failing with the Eagles after like 4 or 5 weeks where it looked like it was going to work out. But he reminds me a lot of Billy Beane with the A's. Created this kind of monster that everybody mimicked and left him on the outside looking in. And now that's exactly where he is at UCLA, seeing all these offenses take off after he introduced, you know, the whole kind of spread and making things just kind of very fast and making the game very exciting. Brian Kelly, I'm going to say the legs on his chair are engulfed in flames. But I don't believe UCLA could do any better besides wait it out and see what happens. You know, I mean, I don't know. I have this feeling that they're going to stick with him and they're going to wait it out. And there's just no other better option currently at this point. So they're going to hang tight with him. Jeremy Pruitt of Tennessee, I think, is on the flip side, skating on some thin ice. I think the legs of that seat and the back fully engulfed, and again that bottom where his rear would be sitting is getting very hot. I don't know how long Tennessee can wait. They've been irrelevant for what, close to 20 years now at this point. And I don't know. They look terrible. They look just terrible, and they haven't even sniffed any type of success in the SEC for quite some time. And the guy who I believe is, I think more or less it just has to do with his contract more than his coaching abilities, Willie Taggart, FSU. I don't know what more Florida State has to see, but I think he's owed another 2 years after this year, and his buyout would be huge. But they, you know, shame on FSU for thinking they saw something special in an all-time 500 coach. Guy didn't recruit a quarterback last year, and here we are. Blackman and Hornibrook. He's not even playing the better of the two. Hornibrook has proven he's going to win games, and there's Blackman not doing anything. And, like, this team is going to get slaughtered by Florida this year. I don't think they're going to sniff a bowl game. And if they do, it's the toilet bowl played in, you know, middle of New Hampshire or whatever. It doesn't matter anymore at this point. They're not going to threaten anything. And on top of that, they're losing games to the weakest division right now in college football, in the ACC. Ben was here. He'd tell you it was the almost competitive conference. They're not doing anything. And Willie Taggart has just as much to blame as it is anybody else. And in my honest opinion, the one guy that nobody's talking about that is going to make a name for himself in the NFL is Cam Akers. They have one of the best backs in college, and he's got to be regretting his decision at this point being at Florida State. He has to be. And with Florida being as good as they are now, that is not going to help with these recruits. And it's going to be some time. Florida State's got a while. So yeah, there's my fun little take on kind of what's going on in the college football coaching world. Not as crazy as the carousel in baseball, but it's only a matter of time. It sure as heck could be. Let's jump to the NFL. Jags are going to be playing the Jets this Sunday. Shoot, I hope it looks a lot better than that Bengals game. Took a while for that Bengals game for them to play and kind of get going, and even then, the score looks lopsided simply because of a defensive touchdown there towards the end of the game. And I just, like, I don't know. I don't think the Jets are any good. I think Sam Darnold is, I don't know. I don't know. Le'Veon Bell was a sign. Don't now have an offensive line to speak of. And I think the Jets are a huge mess. I don't know. I hope the Jags can pull this one off. Gardner Minshew I think that luster is starting to wear off a tiny bit, but you know, there's still plenty of time. He can make his adjustments, but I'd say let's win this one. And my honest opinion, I don't see why not. The only thing that really is really killing the Jaguars right now are all these injuries. I mean, this is almost unprecedented right now. They are currently looking at injuries to Marquise Lee, Dede Westbrook, Leon Jacobs, Najee Goody, Quincy Williams, Andrew Norwell, Cam Robinson, Calais Campbell, and Marcel Darius. And that's not easy to fill. All those voids aren't easy to fill for a low-budget team like the Jaguars are. And, you know, they went and traded, you know, Jalen Ramsey. Best of luck to you in L.A., man, but I still wish you were here in Jacksonville. But even a completely depleted team, I still think, has a better chance than the Jets against the Jets because the Jets just aren't doing anything. Some big games going on in the over the weekend. Vikings look like they're starting to kind of shake up right now. Ended up beating the Redskins 19-9 Thursday night football. What's going on with the Eagles? I don't know. Offense looks completely estranged. People look like they're more or less turning on Carson Wentz right now. I don't know if he's the answer to their problems, but a lack of a running game, I think, is just kind of bizarre. Miles Sanders, a rookie they kind of keep toying with. They went and got Jordan Howard from, you know, the Bears. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. You know, the Eagles playing the Bills. I think that, you know, Bills look good, 5-1 right now. A game that could spell either one's kind of season the rest of the way out. The 2-5 Chargers against the 3-3 Bears. What's going on with Mitchell Trubisky here at this point? I mean, a lot of people are kind of already giving up on him, but I don't see why not. I mean, he just completely looks like a mess right now. The bad game of the weekend that I think could actually be a lot of fun, and you got two of them. You got the Giants and Lions. I like that Lions team on paper, but they're not getting the job done. And the Buccaneers-Titans, you know, two teams drafted quarterbacks the same year. They're both essentially just looking completely lost in the NFL in Marcus Mariota and Jameis Winston right now. Let's see. What else do we got here? We got Cardinals and Saints. I mean, Teddy Bridgewater has looked fantastic. This was the weekend, I believe, that Drew Brees is looking to come back. For the Jaguars, too, I did forget to mention they're saying that Nick Foles is on the way back. But what do they do with Gardner Minshew? And do they just let Foles sit all season? I mean, I think this could kind of be a telling weekend. If the Jaguars do pull off the win against the Jets, they become 4-4. I mean, that's not too far out of it, though. I do believe that the Houston Texans, as of right now, as it pains to say, I think is a better team. I think the Colts are a better team. I think the surprise in the NFL this year, the 49ers right now, currently being 6-0, playing against the 4-2 Panthers. I think that could be a very fun game. I think the Patriots will go 8-0 after beating the crap out of everyone's favorite Super Bowl favorites, the Cleveland Browns. I think after this loss, the Browns would be 2-5, and I think OBJ will start opening his mouth, and the Browns will understand why the Giants decided to let go of the star, quote unquote, the star receiver. I don't know. I don't see it. I would like to see a couple more years of Baker Mayfield, but man, it's just not looking good. Not looking good. Packers Chiefs, I think, is a fantastic game this weekend. That's going to be a lot of fun. And then the Monday night game, the winless Miami Dolphins, 0-6, going against the Steelers, 2-4. Could use a big win there in Heinz Field on Monday Night Football. We got the NFL trade deadline coming up on Tuesday, October 29th. We've already seen some trades that went down. Mohamed Sanu got traded to the New England Patriots. I find that to be very interesting for Tom Brady. I mean, we're talking about a receiver who's been with the Falcons for as long as I can remember and a trusted hands, and that will be interesting. The Patriots went and, speaking of, went and traded defensive end Michael Bennett to the Cowboys. I feel like that's kind of an interesting move there for the Cowboys. We'll see if they can get going. But again, you know, talk about, you know, coaches carousel. I think it's only a matter of time until Garrett's out of there. I don't know how much longer you can wait, but he's not getting the job done. But it'll be interesting to see. I mean, will the Jaguars make a move? Again, you know, if they pull off a win against the Jets and become 500 after this week, I think it's quite possible. What could they use? Probably a receiver. They need a long depth threat, whether it be, again, for Minshew or Foles. I think they need somebody big, and the guy that I was reading, and I could very well be an interesting fit, is Robbie Anderson from the Jets. I think the Jets are going to be sellers, and why not? You know, why not? They're not doing anything. Yeah. With that, you got the NHL. The NHL is still, you know, going at it. We're, you know, a couple weeks in. NHL will be the NHL. It's never on TV anymore. Hard to keep up with. And that's a shame, because it's one of the best sports, in my honest opinion, to go see in person. But to be on TV, very low ratings, and we're not seeing much of it. But, you know, I mean, I think if you were to ask any sports fan, name one NHL player, I think they would either all gravitate towards Wayne Gretzky, who's been retired, and Mario Lemieux, who's been retired. So tough to keep up with that, but that's alive and kicking, supposedly. Wouldn't know because it's not on TV. And with that, essentially covers everything. What I'd love to end off with is the what are you doing? The what are you doing segment of my podcast here. What we like to do here at Bold City Sports Talk essentially is to ask the question, what are you doing? And that is just to look at sports and ask what's going on, what's happening here. And I think the big one from the past week or so is umpire Rob Drake, who recently tweeted on Twitter on Tuesday. It's a mouthful for you. Quote unquote, I will be buying an AR-15 tomorrow. Because if you impeach, in caps, my president this way, comma, you will have another civil war. 3 exclamation points. Hashtag MAGA. If you're not familiar with that, make America great again. 2020. End quotes. Rob Drake, umpire for the MLB. And not sure what it was he was trying to make happen here, but I think everything that he intended to make happen was the complete opposite. He, of course, then deleted the tweet and went viral, if you will. Again, tweeted on Twitter on Tuesday, mouthful, I will be buying an AR-15 tomorrow, because if you impeach my president this way, you will have another civil war. 3 exclamation points. Hashtag MAGA 2020. Oh, man. Again, Rob, no idea what the heck it was that you were trying to get through to the people. But, you know, in a world today with the platforms like Twitter and Facebook and Instagram, and doesn't even matter what it is you go on, when you go and delete something, that generally means that you probably did something wrong. And Rob here wrote this tweet. Again, I have no idea what this means, hence why I'm asking, what are you doing? Because you don't delete things that you write, because that essentially makes it look like you did something wrong. This, we don't live in a world today where you can slip up. We don't live in a world today where you can say something and go, I didn't mean it that way, it came out the wrong way. When you preconceive any type of notion, and that's the problem with social media these days, you are consequenting yourself by going, not only did I say these things, quote unquote, but I also took a minute to think of these things, use my fingers to type these things out on my phone and or my computer, and I had the ability to either not send it or send it. And Rob Drake here sent this tweet that is beyond baffling. Why are you buying an AR-15 tomorrow? Why is it your president? And why are we having another civil war, sir? Who do you think you are? Why do you think, one, that your opinion even matters in any of this? This is another consequence of politics essentially ruling everything. And if you don't believe that politics are involved in sports today, then I guess you've never heard of Colin Kaepernick. But that's beside the point. You're an umpire for the Major League Baseball. You're not running for president. You're not a soldier who should be walking around with an AR-15. You're an umpire for a baseball, a child's game. And you're tweeting these things. And mind you, First Amendment, freedom of speech. Sure, say whatever it is you want. But what does this even mean? Why are you buying an AR-15? Like, you know, people who like, these, there's like psychopaths who like shoot up schools do less tweeting than this. Like, what point were you trying to prove here, Rob? Like, there, you're nobody than just someone who has a job, who got hired to do something. And I mean, if I were to tweet anything like this, I know I'd lose my job, because it essentially is, again, even if he didn't mean it to be, is a threatening, you're threatening people. And we all know in today's world, you can't threaten people. You just can't do it. Anything is taken way out of context, but you are stating the fact that you're going to buy an AR-15 because you're worried about people impeaching your president. And for some reason, there's going to be another civil war. Why is throwing out civil war so lightly these days? Civil war, we've only seen one. It was the North versus the South against slavery. And here you are throwing out civil war because you're worried about the president being impeached. None of this makes sense. Go back to making horrible ball and strike calls and leaving politics to the politicians out there who are getting paid to do this job. I hate to even say this, but it's true. And this goes for all walks of life. Just do your job. Because in all honesty, Rob, nobody knew who you were until this happened. I wouldn't say anybody. I'll say close to 99%, especially in the sports world. And here we are. Everyone's talking about you. What are you doing? I'll tell you what you shouldn't be doing. You shouldn't be buying an AR-15. even if your president, quote unquote, is impeached. And never will there ever be another civil war, because nothing to that magnitude that started the Civil War will ever happen ever again. Because history is there to be learned from. And I don't think, and I will put money on it, that there's a really good chance that nothing ever to the magnitude of what started the Civil War will ever happen again, because it's just not. And don't worry about buying an AR-15. Even if the president's impeached, because whatever it is you plan on doing with it, I'm sure you will never get away with now, simply because of the fact that you made yourself look so foolish on a social media site. And the fact that you even took it down proves to everybody else that you don't know what you're talking about. So that's my what are you doing. I'm going to wrap up this podcast. I appreciate you guys listening. You girls. You everybody. I hope you enjoyed yourself. Leave some comments. Let me know how bad I did. Let me know where I could improve. Tell me some things. I'd love to hear anything that you guys have to come up with. Again, I hope you enjoyed yourself. Bull City Sports Talk. My name's Rob. Really great talking. I love doing this, and I hope y'all are enjoying it. So with that, I will be chatting with you soon. Have a good night.